Hi, this is Seth Kahn, the author of FreelanceFortune.com, the website dedicated to helping free agents succeed in every aspect of their lives. I have for you here a real treat, a candid conversation with consultant extraordinaire Alan Weiss. Alan is the author of Million Dollar Consulting. Most of the interview is dedicated to how you leverage your commercially published book to achieve lucrative consulting engagements. However, toward the end, the exchange takes an interesting turn, and we explore a philosophy of life that supports exceptional results in every domain. I am proud to be associated with Alan. I've studied under his mentorship for 8 years. His techniques and unique perspective on marketing have brought me great returns, both in my business and personal life. Because his ideas are original, practicable, and valuable, I turned to him when I needed to find out how to turn my book into better consulting contracts. In the conversation you're about to hear, you will learn why a commercially published book is like a referral and how to use that to your advantage. Techniques for getting the book in front of the right people and following up effectively. How you can use trade associations to get your book into the hands of economic buyers. Tactics to create the right kind of publicity, the kind that puts you in front of your buyers. And how Alan used his worst-selling book to generate over $2 million in business. So now, here's my conversation with Alan.
How can you use a newly published commercial book to create better consulting engagements?
Well, funny you should ask. First, let me dispel some myths and some things here. The fact is that people have heard me talk, I think, about the fact that the platinum rule is a buyer-to-buyer referral, and the gold standard is a commercially published book. And the reason that those are the top two is that they're closely aligned. You can look at a book as very similar to a third-party referral, because what you've got is a publisher, and that's why this has to be commercially published. If you've published it, then you lose this validation. You've got a publisher who has said, in a tougher publishing world than ever, I've invested money in creating this, in aligning myself with this author, in promoting this book. And just like I look and wonder at people who can play the piano, a lot of people look and wonder at people who can write books. So a book is very close to that third-party referral. Now, having said that, I would ask your listeners, how do you use a third-party referral? Well, you get in touch with your prospective buyer, and you say, Mary Jones or John Smith said that you and I should really talk because. And guess what? That's how you use a commercially published book. What you have to avoid, and I've been speaking to at least a half a dozen people about this, five of the six of whom are deaf to my pleas, don't get first book-itis. You and I are not in the publishing business. We are not in the authorial business. And I've got news for you, and this includes every single person listening to this. I have more credentials as an author than any of you, and for that matter, than of most people you'll ever meet. 36 books in 9 languages, 27 or 8 of which are commercially published. And I don't go around saying that I'm an author, and I don't go around looking at my book sales. Now, occasionally I've gotten lucky. You know, Million Dollar Consulting has sold well over 400,000 copies. It's in its fourth edition, but that's not the point. The point is that the people who enter my mentor program or attend the Million Dollar Consulting College or who get involved with me in a variety of ways almost inevitably have said they've read Million Dollar Consulting. That is the point. And so you should use a book like you'd use that third-party referral. You get it in front of your prospective buyer. That means that putting it in your email signature and putting it on your website and doing things like that, those things are nice. I certainly advocate doing them. But you have to use the book as a singularity. That is, you have to take a book and put it in front of a prospect. And simply saying you've got this book out there and worrying about your Amazon rank and worrying about whether you can get it on this listing service and whether about getting your reviews is nonsense. Because you're not Tom Clancy, you're not, I was going to say Jacqueline Suzanne, God, she hasn't been a while, but you get my drift. Danielle Steele, you're not one of these people who are making their money, James Patterson, by selling a gabillion books around the world, turning them out as much as your production capability allows. What you're trying to do is get that singular book in front of a single buyer. So how do you do that? If you've got a fix on your value proposition and who your buyers are for that value proposition, you want to get the book in front of them. Now, there are several ways to do that. You can do it directly. That is, you can send them the book with a special invitation to read it. Unless you do something special, it's probably not going to work. But I'll give you an idea of something special. When my first book came out with my co-author, The Innovation Formula, Mike Robert actually had messengers in about 10 major cities deliver this book. The book was in a tuxedo. He put a tuxedo jacket on it and with a rose, and the messenger would show up at an executive's office, and there was always a secretary in front. I mean, this is, we're talking about the late 80s here. And the messenger would say, the rose is for you, the book is for your boss. And it always got in. Now, Mike spent a lot of money on that, but Mike and I were selling high-level training and consulting stuff. He had a big training company. I had a consulting practice. And that's how he spent his money. And we got in to see people. I mean, Caterpillar Tractor is one of our very first clients. 3M was an early client, all on innovation. So the book was on innovation because that's what he wanted to train in. That's what I wanted to consult in. That's how we got that book in front of individual buyers, with that kind of effort. Now, you can get it there through a third party, in that you can get a trade association to endorse it and make it available, assuming, just like with a speech, the trade association's members constitute your potential buyers or at least recommenders. So if the trade association puts it in their house organ, or they give it out in mass for their next meeting, or they send it along with their next mailing to their people because you provide it for free, you're not worried about sales here, that's a great endorsement. You know, recently, I mean, only the IMC could do this. The IMC is holding a meeting somewhere, I don't know, in Washington or Portland, somewhere on the West Coast, I think, and I'm not even paying attention. But I see somewhere that the title of this two-day meeting or this event is Thrive. And so I said to them, how would you like my book Thrive for this? I'll provide it for you at cost, you know, and you can give it out. And my point was that it would do a lot more for them to get people to attend their session, which they wanted to show a profit for. And they said it was too complicated, the bookkeeping wouldn't work, they didn't want to put money out up front. Now, you know, personally, I don't care. I was trying to do them a favor, but I wanted to see some commitment from them, but they're too dumb to even make that kind of a commitment. So what you need to do is see if you can get some third party to support the book in terms of getting it in front of your buyers. Now, the same would obtain for publicity media, and that is getting a review in training and development or some, you know, SHRM, HR magazine, doesn't really matter. But if you can get even a paragraph about it in Bottom Line, or let's just say that Dan Whedon or Scott Simmons, your primary business focus is insurance, and there's something called Insurance Today, and you can get a mention of the book in there, that's a great third-party endorsement. So you have to look for ways to get this book uniquely in front of your buyer and not worry about overall book sales or Amazon rankings or things like that. You've got to tuck your ego away, because I've got news for you. You are not writing War and Peace. You're not even writing Drucker on Strategy here. And if I don't feel that way, you shouldn't feel that way. How's that? How am I doing?
You're doing great. I've got some questions. These were great, great examples here. I wrote down these three areas. The first was the stunt that you pulled where you put the book in a tuxedo.
He got these tuxedo wrappers that wrapped around the book. The book came out in hardcover originally. And there was a lapel, and the lapel had a rose in it. And the messenger would whip the rose out of the lapel, say to the secretary, who's always a woman, it's the late 80s, and say, the rose is for you, the book's for your boss. And the secretary, as far as we know, 100% of the time, put the rose in a vase and put the book on the boss's desk.
That's wonderful.
And said, I think maybe you should take a look at this.
Now, how did you follow up from that?
Mike called these people and said, how did you like the book? And they would. And so when he called the secretary, of course, the secretary said, I'll put you right through. She said, you're the guy with the rose. He said, yeah. She said, just a minute, I'll see if he's available. Or she'd say something like this, you know, he's not here. Call back at 3, I'll put you on the calendar.
Wow.
And so then when Mike got the guy would say, wait a minute. You'd hear sort of the shuffling in the background. And he'd say, you're the guy with this book in the tuxedo. Mike said, yeah. He said, you know, I haven't read it. What are you talking about? And Mike would tell him, we didn't care if anybody read the book. That's not the point. I did $250,000 of business with a subsidiary of the LA Times because I sent my strategy book around to people I thought could use it. And you've heard me say the strategy book was probably my worst seller of all time. Came out in hardcover, never went to softcover. HarperCollins, though. And It was a very good book on strategy, but it just didn't sell popularly. But I did over $2 million of business, and here's why. And maybe that's why it didn't sell, but it got me so much business. I had different chapters in there, strategy for nonprofits, strategy for training companies, strategy for small growth businesses, and so on. And so I'm figuring there's something here for everybody. I didn't ever intend it. I mean, if you're a corporate executive, you're not going to read strategy for nonprofits or strategy for small business, you know, unless you're on a board probably. So but what happened was somebody in the L.A. Times forwarded it to the president of their training division with a note, there's a chapter here for you. And she looked at that one chapter and called me out there and said, nobody has ever written strategy work for training companies. And I'm thinking, I wrote one 20-page chapter, $250,000, you know? So that's how, you called it a stunt, and that's fair enough. But you could use a stunt that is external, that is, you do something around the book, or you could use a stunt that's internal. There's something in the book that prompts this, some test, some baseline study. But the thing is, I don't care if people read the book. That's not the point. I don't care if people are best friends of the person referring me. I just want to get in the door to see them. And so you always have to have your objective in mind. So, you know, the last thing I'm going to do, Seth, is go out and say, now, let's talk about chapter 6. What did you think about that?
Right, right. So the value of the book here is to open a door and establish your authority through a third party.
Yes, you can't even look at it as a book. What you have to look at it is a mechanism, just like a reference is a mechanism, just like somebody hearing you speak is a mechanism, just like a product could be a mechanism. It's a mechanism to open a door. It's a key to a certain lock. And that's how you have to look at this. I mean, I've written all this stuff. I calculated once I had written, 23 million words, if you look at all my columns and everything else. Yet I have no pride of authorship. My ego is not involved in people telling me they love my work. And when people tell me they don't like it, I say, you know, who cares? You're lost. But so many people write one book and they have this tremendous ego and pride of authorship. For God's sake, you know, calm down. Get into a cold shower.
So when you talk about using this book to generate marketing gravity, when you have a bestseller like you do with Million Dollar Consulting, you really it sounds like you're creating a funnel that brings people who are interested in improving their practice to you. But when you have what you did with the Tuxedo book, it's like you're using it like a rifle shot, and you're going after individual targets. Is that right?
Yeah, let me just change that analogy a bit. I've just reworked the accelerant curve. Some people have seen this. I've begun presenting it, and I'll do it again next week in the consulting college and the Hall of Fame meeting and so forth. I've sort of broken this out. I did it with the new product workshop and so on. There's a bounce factor in the accelerant curve. So Million Dollar Consulting is a good example of a bounce factor. People read the book, and instead of proceeding down the accelerant curve, they get bounced four or five notches to the right. You know, they get sort of a 45-degree trajectory out of that. And so people who read Million Dollar Consulting, or for that matter, Money Talks, they don't say, well, maybe I'll try one of his teleconferences, although some do. A lot of them say, how the hell do I sign up? How do I work with this guy? Mm-hmm. And so there's a $20 purchase, whatever that book retails for, I couldn't even tell you. There's a $20 or so purchase, though, that bounces people to a $3,500 or today a $5,500 relationship or a $15,000 workshop experience and just multiplies on and on. So that's what happens with Million Dollar Consulting. It's a bounce effect. With the innovation formula, that you're right, that's a rifle shot as opposed to this bounce factor that anybody could avail themselves of. Here's a rifle shot that we're saying. I think he picked out something like 50 top executives in 10 different cities. And he did this messenger for 5 in each city, or whatever, however that worked. But there was a specific investment to try to make that work. And you have to think of this. The original innovation formula broke every... It was our first book. We knew nothing. It was 128 pages soaking wet. And it went into paperback, and then it became one of the strategic series books and was used on the curriculum at the Wharton School of Business and Temple and Villanova. And so the HarperCollins subsidiary at the time, Ballinger, called me up to Cambridge Square, where they were located in Boston, and said, you know, what do you want to do next? I mean, this was a handshake over lunch. That's what publishing was back then. They were so thrilled. And I said, so I'm thinking to myself desperately over lunch there, frantically, I'm thinking, okay, what do I want to sell? What do I want to sell? And I said, I want to do a book on behavior. They said, fine. I said, do you want another title? They said, get back to us. And I swear to God, we shook hands. They sent me a contract, and I did this book called Managing for Peak Performance. And that did go into paperback, and it went into German, And I, because I was consulting on behavior, I, you know, eventually I became president of a behavioral consulting firm. And then they said, that book did really well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, strategy. And that's when I did the strategy book. And Ballinger folded, they folded it back into HarperCollins. And the strategy, and then things started to change in the publishing business. By now it's the very early 90s. And they didn't promote the book. It didn't do well for them, but it did real well for me. But there was no handshake and fourth book. And I won't go down this trail in this teleconference, but that's when Million Dollar Consulting was born. That was my fourth book. So in those days, all I was thinking of is what key do I need to unlock another door?
Right.
You know, I didn't care about bestseller lists. I didn't care about any of that stuff. I just wanted to get into a room with somebody who could buy. Get me into a room with somebody who can buy, and I'm a happy guy. And that's why, you know, you go on the forum and you see people wondering if they should spend $200 or $500, even $1,000, to get on an airplane and go see a buyer. That's the business you're in. And if you're not going to invest $1,000 or do something special about your book to get a buyer's attention, you need to seriously rethink whether this is the business you want to be in, because it's the marketing business.
So, okay, so next question. This is great. You talked about trade associations and having a enlisting a third party to distribute your book. So suppose you get a trade association to distribute your book. Is there a way to then follow up with buyers? Presumably that's who they're distributing it to. That's their audience.
Oh, hell yes. And there are all different ways to do that. So let me just give you some.
Okay.
So some you generate, some they generate. So, for example, you could put in the book a flyer. Folded into the pages, and you know, you get to page 87 and there's this flyer folded in there, and what it says is special to the people who receive this book, an hour's free coaching, a website that you can access with this code, a newsletter subscription, I mean something that doesn't cost anything, where you're giving them value, but they got it because they got this book through their trade association. So the trade association feels good about it. It's an offer that only they can make available. It's a win-win-win. So that's how you can promote it, you know, that way. Another way to promote it, though, is you say to the trade association, I'll pay for the mailing. And so the trade association says, what? You say, yeah, look, you mail it. You're going to mail it book rate anyway. We all know this. And for any of you who use postage meters, I mean, when I mail things to Amazon, Amazon buys books from me to fulfill their orders, my self-published books. And when they buy books from me, I always send them book rate to them because Amazon, you know, sells them at a cut rate. I don't make as much money. And book rate is very, very inexpensive. And so if you say to them, look, I'll pay for a book rate to your members, so what if you're paying $2,000 altogether? I mean, one sale takes care of that forever.
Right.
Another thing you can do is you say to them, look, let's really make this an event that goes beyond a mailing. Let's turn it into a bit of a process. Why don't at the same time you do an interview with me in your house organ? And what you say is, you know, you're going to be receiving this book, you know, written by Seth Kahn, and he's featured today on page 2 of our house organ, and we'd love for you to take advantage of the wise words he has to say. Do a free speech for them in return for their, you know, selling your book and so forth. A lot of these trade associations, like the American Management Association, the Conference Board, and God knows how many other places, you know, project management and quality places, they all have their own bookstores. And they don't have to publish your book to have it in the bookstore. And so, you know, the American Council of Life Insurance or somebody, who knows, American Press Institute, they have a bookstore that members can buy from online or, you know, when they visit the place to attend a conference. Let them carry your book in the bookstore. The ASTD has a bookstore. So if your book gets around like that through their endorsement, that can help. And I'd provide it for free. You know, I'll never forget, when Million Dollar Consulting first came out, I was in an upscale bookstore here in Rhode Island, and I brought in 4 copies of the book in hardcover. And I said, listen, why don't you put this on your shelves? I noticed they weren't carrying it. And I don't do stupid things. You know, like some people say, well, put your book on the shelf anyway. The bookstore doesn't have it in their SKU system, and they'll have to wonder where they got it. I mean, that's just so stupid. You know, turn your book face out. But I said to the owner, here are 4 of my books. You might want to sell them. And they said, we're not giving you any money for this. I said, you keep all the money. They said, what? I said, you put the book on the shelf, keep the money. If it sells well, order it from McGraw-Hill. I just want my book to be seen in key places. I remember there was an NSA event somewhere, National Speakers Association, in one of these cities, you know, national, and it was probably like, you know, they always hold things in the summer in cheap accommodations because no speakers who go there are really successful. I'm exaggerating by not by much, you know. So it's like on the surface of Mercury in the middle of friggin' August, right? And so you get off this rocket ship. It lands at, you know, Metropolis Mercury, and there's an airport that's melting around you. But because, you know, nobody can afford more than $4 a night rooms in, you know, the worst Western hotel or whatever it is. So, yeah, we're a very successful speakers organization. You probably want to edit this out. This old funny story about, I spent a lot of time in Vegas, and there's a big electronic show that comes to Vegas once a year. I can't even think of the name of it. But the deal in Vegas, the funny line in Vegas, is the 2 weeks all these electronic guys are in town is when the prostitutes take their vacations. I just think that's one of the funniest stories I've ever heard. By the way, that's true. It's absolutely a true story. Anyway, what was I? So a speaker, though, who lived in the town in Mercury where this thing was being held, got the airport bookstores to stock his books. And his books were about, it was some kind of coaching book for speakers. And so his population was coming to town. And he did some deal with the airport bookstores. And maybe he gave them all for free, but that would have been smart. And so everybody walking past these bookstores on the way into from the gate saw this guy's book in a display in the window. It was brilliant. Mm. You know, that's the kind of thing you have to think about doing. Because you only need a couple of sales. You know, you don't need to be number 400 on Amazon. All you need are a couple of sales that are going to make you not only $10,000 or $100,000 now, but constitute repeat business and spin-off business and referral business and all that kind of stuff. That's the whole point.
Hmm. So there's no shortage of trade associations. So obviously, I'm guessing, you need to pick a trade association that represents your economic buyers. Is that right?
Yeah, and for anybody listening, I would assume there's at least 10 trade associations that do that. And so let me just go back to that insurance example, because it's a specific niche. I spoke years ago at the American Council of Life Insurance. I had an insurance client, Cologne Reinsurance in Greenwich, Connecticut, and the CEO, who was my buyer, was the program chair and that year. And he said, my God, you know, he didn't know I was a speaker, but that's another story. Anyway, long story short is he got me on the agenda as the keynoter. And so 250 CEOs are in front of me. So that's the kind of place where you want to have your book. That, you know, you don't want to say to them, listen, for another $7,500, I'll provide 250 books. What you want to say is, how'd you like 250 of my books? My only request is that you distribute them to the participants in their materials, and my introducer says the following about it. I mean, that's worth a lot more than $7,500, because every person in that room is a buyer. So there are myriad opportunities like that that you have to be alert to and have the marketing savvy to pursue.
The third example you talked about was about generating PR, and it sounds to me like what you're saying is that you take this book, which is already a third-party endorsement, and then you can use it to create specific third-party endorsements that will help move your career forward. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right, and you can do that in a few ways. One of them is, one of the reasons that you want endorsements on the back of your book is not to endorse the book, because people only read endorsements after they've purchased the books. I mean, people are completely confused about that. You know, people try to get these forewords written by big names. Nobody buys a book because of the foreword. Mm-hmm. And then the latest thing, which is stupider than ever, I mean, it's stupider than even dumbing down for an audience, is the first 8 pages of the book are full of testimonials. It's ridiculous. Nobody buys a book because of that, you know. That's all after the fact. Who cares? You're just killing trees. But the reason that you put endorsements, testimonials, on the rear cover of the book is that those people endorsing you constitute potential leverage points. I will give you a specific example. Let's go back to, you know, there was this discussion recently on the forum and you know, about whether my workshops are worthwhile if they're in a subject that I don't normally talk about. My God. And what I said there was, you know, you don't understand. I think differently from the way you think. And if you spend time with me, you'll learn more about how I think, you know. I mean, Aviv, bless his heart, seems to think I've been struck by lightning. But trust me, if I was struck by lightning, the lightning would suffer. In my strategy book, I got the endorsement of a guy for whose group I had spoken. He was, at the time, he was the group president for the New York Times. Now, that means the New York Times had about 24 smaller newspapers, and he was their group president. So all these publishers reported to him. And he had been part of a Pulitzer Prize-winning team. And so, his name was Jack Harrison. And so I said, Jack, how'd you like to endorse my strategy book? He said, well, I'd love to. I said, well, here's the draft. And so he writes this glowing endorsement. I wish I had had this years ago. I would have been a far better group president for the New York Times, he writes. Hmm. And so I wrote, you know, Jack Harrison, Pulitzer Prize, you know, winning, yada, yada. Next thing I know, the book comes out, and I send him an autographed copy thanking him. And he calls me and sheepishly says, can I have another copy? And I said, did you lose it? He says, no, but I want to keep one in my office at work and one in my home for when people visit. And I said, it's on the way. What's your FedEx address? Mm. And so he went around telling everybody about the book.
Mm.
And that's why you want to get those kinds of testimonials. So those are the tricks of the trade you can use, where it looks like somebody's doing you a favor, but it's a different favor. It's like a misdirection. You know, so they're endorsing the book, which doesn't really help sell a book. But by endorsing the book, they're going to help sell it in a different way.
Mm.
So be careful who you get for endorsers. You want people who are capable of doing that.
Right, right. It's like everything on that book is a mechanism, as you described earlier in the conversation.
Yeah, if you think about it, I did a series of interviews, not unlike you're doing, Seth, about 2 years ago for my teleconference series that I do every year. And so that year I did 9 teleconferences, and then I think Aviv he interviewed me for the last one. He did a very good job, by the way, one of the best interviews I've ever had. And but for the 9, I mean, one of the guys I interviewed was the president of the American Press Institute because, you know, they have been a client for a long time, and this guy has all kinds of clout and influence all over the place. So, of course, I interviewed him, you know, and sent him a copy of it and thanked him profusely and so forth and so on. I mean, those are the kinds of things you have to think of. And so, on the one hand, I said, well, I think it'll be interesting for my listeners, at least some of them, to hear the president of the American Press Institute. But I also think it's sure going to help me. So I didn't care, subsequent to that, how much that CD sold. That wasn't my point. My point was that I could enclose that CD and use it for newspaper clients or newspaper prospects or media prospects. And that he would certainly be mentioning me and have my name even more in the forefront of his cerebral cortex when people came to him and said, we need some consulting help.
Mm. Thank you very much. This has been excellent.
Well, I've had a very good time.
I have one question I have to ask you. You said you were talking about getting struck by lightning, and you said that you think differently. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, I mean, people don't really deconstruct enough. I mean, I love Aviv, you know, sort of, I'm trying to wheedle more quotes out of him on the forum because he talks like, you know, I walk on water and, you know, I have this God-given gift that's very different in life. All I can tell you is this, for the people who spend the most time with me in different settings, and the spirituality workshop was a big loss, let me tell you something, not for me. But people who spend time with me in different settings, I think have learned that I tend to view situations differently from the way they do. When I ran one of the consulting college grad schools, I had teams working on actual problems in the Ritz-Carlton in Naples. And Drew Stevens was there and was on one of the teams. And I walked in to check on the team. There were, I don't know, 6 or 7 people on the team. And the person from the Ritz-Carlton was giving him a debriefing. And I walked in, and I asked 2 or 3 questions of this person. She answered them, and I walked out again. And Drew caught up with me later, and he said, you were in there for 1:42. I timed you, and you know exactly what the problem is, don't you? I said, I sure do. And that team had a hard time grappling with the problem, and they spent 3 hours on it.
Mm.
So I tend to frame things very differently. I tend to apply different criteria. For, you know, just a simplistic example, I immediately ask whether we're in process or content. I immediately ask whether we're in cause or effect. I immediately ask whether we're in preventive or contingent action. I mean, I see these to myself, and these gears are constantly whirling around, but I can do that, you know, in a split second. And that drives me either to the place I want to go to or to a solution or to an improvement or whatever it is radically quickly. And so when you said to me, you know, look, I think people are spinning their wheels a little bit on this book publishing thing, and I'd like to get your insights on different ways to do it, you know, I said, fine, and didn't think about it anymore until you called, you know, 30 minutes ago. But I knew you'd ask me good questions, and I knew that would stimulate some thinking. But you have to be able to look at the world in a non-standard way. Otherwise, you'll forever be part of the crowd. But everybody can do that. I mean, maybe not everybody equally well, but I tell you something, it's a learnable skill. It's not a behavior. It's a learnable skill. And the more you do it, the better you get at it. Just like speaking Spanish. You know, the more you speak Spanish, the more you're forced to speak Spanish, if you want to get food and lodging, the better you get at it. So I have no affinity for language, but I can speak sort of what I call social Spanish. And consequently, you have to be willing to immerse yourself in some different kinds of thinking if you really want to stand out in this business.
Hmm. So here's an off question for you. One of the things I noticed is that you're a student of military strategy.
Yeah.
Do you think that that relates to this?
Yes, and it's not just the strategy I'm a student of. I'm a student of how personalities react in different ways when not only their own life and death is on the line, but the fate of nations is on the line. So you look at Eisenhower making the call on D-Day, which was very problematic, you know, given the weather reports at the time. I mean, hell, the weathermen today can't tell you if it's going to snow tomorrow. And so he had to think about whether he was going to commit, you know, a million people to going across a channel into enemy guns. You think of John Paul Jones on the Bon Homme Richard being shot to hell by the Serapis and telling them, I haven't started a fight yet, guys, while they're taking shots at him in the quarterdeck, and not only defeats the Serapis as the ship sinks, but takes it over so he can sail home. This is beyond courage. This is a kind of real-time intelligence that, I'll give you an example. Bill Russell, the great basketball player, wrote a book called Second Wind, and he said that the true measure of a champion is not how well they perform normally, but how well they perform under pressure.
Mm.
And that's why I'm saying, you know, I always want the Q&A period. I never want to hear questions in advance. I want to walk out there right to the edge of the audience and say, give me your best shot.
Mm.
I'll do battle on the forum, you know, whether I believe in the issue or not, because I want to see what goes on. And so if you look at the military history and you look at these brave men and women, but those especially in leadership positions who had to make tough calls at tough moments, you start to appreciate that one of two things happens under pressure. You either choke and panic, and choke and panic are two different things, by the way, two very different things that I'm probably going to speak about in the Thrive workshop. Or, instead of choking and panicking, you suddenly get laser-like sharpness and focus in your thinking.
Mm.
And that difference is a huge difference in life. And that's why military history is so fascinating to me, among other things. I mean, among scientific history and among biographies. I'm just finishing the biography of Soupy Sales.
Mm.
And for those of you who know Soupy Sales, it's quite interesting because he really was a breakthrough artist, and his life and times were very fascinating. So in any case, there's nobody I can't learn from, but there's some people I can learn from a whole lot.
And I wondered, does that also connect? You mentioned the spirituality workshop was a loss, but not for you. When you talk about living on the edge like that, and courage, and rising to championship, and putting yourself out at risk, that speaks to me of some kind of inner core, some kind of a philosophy that has to do with spirituality. Is that?
You're exactly right. I mean, we all face every day uncertainty, unknown, which is why I kid around about, you know, this 85,000-mile-per-hour rock circling an exploding star. We focus on tough decisions. We focus on things we can't deal with and just have to cope with. But we also focus, maybe less melodramatically, on those small decisions that mean the difference between success and failure on an accretion, on an accumulative basis. And there is an inner core. There's a self-mastery which guides you in how to make these decisions. And if you look at people who are really successful, by whatever standard you apply, they make more of those decisions right than wrong. And there's, besides the behaviors and besides the skills, there is an inner glow. There is an inner ember that has nothing to do with religion per se, but has a lot to do with where you see yourself in space and time.
Mm.
And I am convinced beyond a doubt, I mean, given the fact that if you take both executives and mentorees over the last decade plus, I've probably coached over 2,000 people, I am convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that I and some other people tend to view the world and the events that happen to us in a different manner from others because we've actually recognized that contributing factor.
Mm. Powerful. Okay. Well, you've certainly given us a lot to think about.
You're going
to
play this whole thing?
Yeah, you bet.
Okay.
Except for this very next part, I want to ask you right now, is it okay? I mean, I would prefer to, but I would certainly delete it on your request. you made some disparaging remarks about the NSA, and you told the joke about prostitution.
No, no, leave it all in.
Leave it all in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Leave it all in.
Okay.
Yeah, you can leave this part in, too.
Okay. This was a great conversation, Alan.
Yeah,
I
really enjoyed it, Seth. This was a hell of a lot of fun. And so put it up there, because I'll listen to it again and enjoy myself.
All right. Take care, Alan.
Thanks a lot, Seth.
Bye-bye.
Bye.